Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on your time zone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Parker. I'm a member of the marketing team at Perry Johnson Companies, and I'll be helping to facilitate today's webinar and offer technical support to our speakers. Today, we're welcoming a special guest, Jennifer Crandall of Safe Food and Root. We also have Chris here with us, who is a member of the sales team here, and he can answer any questions directly for FSI. Chris, if you want to say hi.
Yeah, thanks for having me today, Parker. Really looking forward to it.
And with that, we'll hand it off to Jennifer.
Okay, let me get my bearings real quick. All right, so thank you so much for having me on here, to Chris and Parker and the rest of the team. I really appreciate the time that I'm given to be able to share some of my insights, and just wanted to share that this is a three-part series that we're going to be talking about. So today we're going to be talking about five ways that GFSI helps build culture. And then part two of the series is already scheduled for August 23rd, and it is 10 ways to develop food safety culture. So keep an eye out for that in the future. And then we are working on part three, which will be sometime in late fall, how software can help build food safety culture as well. So we're really excited to get to share a lot of insights about that from our perspective. So again, I mentioned that we're in part one. So most of the references, just so that you know, come straight off of the GFSI website. So you'll see that link provided in some of the slides for reference, and feel free to check that out if you'd like. I'm going to be pulling a lot of information from one of their food safety culture papers. A little bit about my background and why I am here. I have a Purdue food science degree and 25 years in the industry. I've been becoming an expert on supplier compliance management and the food safety processes around it for most of my career. Just over half of it has been spent at the corporate offices at Kroger, helping them with their food safety compliance of their private label sector for the vendors. And in 2018, I veered away from the corporate life altogether and founded Safe Food and Root, which is now a food safety consulting agency, making corporate level food safety programs accessible to small and medium-sized businesses. I've contributed to Dr. Darren Detweiler's 2021 published book, Building the Future of Food Safety Technology, Blockchain and Beyond, where I discussed a lot of things to consider from the user perspective of all the documentation that needs to be digitized as we go into digitizing a lot of our materials. And then I'm also a regular guest lecturer at Purdue University, Cincinnati State, and Fresno State University. My passion is bringing to food businesses the support that I felt when I was working in a corporately managed food facility versus when I worked for privately held companies that only had one or two manufacturing sites. I love to make the programs accessible that I had learned and assist companies to get their food safety programs to the same level as a large CPG or retailer, the way they manage their programs. So without further ado, let's jump in and talk a little bit about the definitions and get into a little bit of the meat of it. Recently, I was reading an article from one of my peers. Her name's Deb Calviello. She is known as the drop-in CEO. And the first sentence of her article is this: the worst time to mitigate a crisis is when you're in the middle of one. And that really grabbed my attention. And it's so true for food safety as well. The worst time to mitigate a food safety crisis is when you're in the middle of it. Food safety should be part of everyday activities where you are continuously doing risk assessments that include food safety from receiving of raw materials all the way to finished product delivery to the client. It should be so ingrained in the core structure of the company that an outsider would not know who to talk to first when they walk into the facility about food safety because everyone is managing it. It should be a part of all discussions and a critical role in discussions. At minimum, the food safety quality team should be a consulted partner to the company for most activities. And that is why food safety culture is really important. It must be thought through at every stage of the business. It can't be an afterthought. It needs to be part of the discussions very early on. Usually in our conversations, we find that companies are choosing to upgrade their food safety programs because a customer requested them or because they've had an inspection and that they need to fix some things. They have some corrective actions. And that's not the best time to implement food safety culture. It needs to be well before that. Whether that's a crisis or not in consideration, it needs to be long before that. So, thinking about it again, why is food safety a common topic? Why is it important? Well, according to the World Health Organization, globally, around 600 million cases of foodborne illnesses occur and lead up to 420,000 deaths. Illness-wise, that's one in 10 people globally that get sick from foodborne illness. And much of the deaths occur in developing countries where food standards are not strict or enforced, but we have a global food supply chain. So thus that impacts our culture even more. We have to recognize that. It's obviously still an issue. And even in the US, we are contributing to those numbers as the Centers for Disease Control still report that we are approximately 3,000 deaths per year related to foodborne illness. And just a couple of weeks ago, on June 7th, we celebrated World Food Safety Day, which had the theme of food standards save lives. That was to promote better handling practices for food. This was a tip to honor the 60th anniversary of the development of the Codex Alimentarius. And ultimately, it's showing how when you have standardized systems and processes, technically, you quote unquote should have safer food. Some might argue that the standards are not everything, but they do help. On the WHO's website, the World Health Organization's website, they reference these four categories on the right of this slide that they call an action to these various groups. They ask policymakers to make a safe food an easy choice, supporting programs that feed schools and publicly owned food outlets, focus on establishing robust national food safety programs and systems, and ensure it complies to food safety standards such as Codex Alimentarius. Also, they are asked to encourage and engage multi-sectoral collaboration at the local, national, regional, and global levels. Food businesses are also asked to engage employees, suppliers, and other stakeholders to grow and develop a food safety culture. And they are asked to comply with national and international food standards. Educational institutions and workplaces are asked to promote safe food handling, engage with families and involve them in safe food safety activities, and support food safety education. And then finally, consumers are asked to practice safe food handling at home and follow the WHO's five keys to safer food, which are keep the area clean and practice good hygiene, which includes, as we all know and should know as food safety experts, washing hands regularly, keeping surfaces clean, stuff like that. They also encourage separating raw and cooked foods, cooking meats thoroughly, keep foods at safe temperatures, and use safe water and raw materials. Consumers are also asked to keep informed and promote food safety. So with that, I'm going to jump into a poll question for you, and I will turn it over real quick to the team to execute the poll. I'd like to understand where you are today. What do you feel influences food safety culture the most? And you see your selections, so just pick one, and I think they'll give you a few seconds to get through that. Usually we give about 30 seconds, or if we get 50% of the votes in. So as that keeps going. All right, so do we have results that you can share? There we go. Okay, so 50% of the votes were management commitment. 17% were in the standards and GFSI audit certificates. Food safety quality assurance manager, 3%. Woo! And then empowered employees on the line, 30%. So really interesting poll. I actually was tricking you a little bit. So my anticipation was that it actually is all of them can influence food safety culture, but most, I do appreciate the answer was that most people believe it was management commitment. My team and I had some conversations yesterday with some of our peers, and one of the things that came up that was a great response to that question, at least I thought so, was it's a commitment of resources. So not just management commitment, but committing resources to it. And I thought that was a really profound answer as well. So let's start with what culture is. What, you know, food safety culture, we talk a lot about, but let's just kind of narrow in on what this definition really is. So I pulled from the Merriam-Webster dictionary, and it defines culture as the following. Oh, help if I push the button here. So beliefs, it's the customary social forms and material traits of a racial, religious, or social group. Also, the characteristic features of everyday existence, such as diversions or a way of life, shared by people in a place or time. Second part of the definition says the set of shared values or a set of shared attitudes, values, goals, and practices that characterizes an institution or an organization. The third part of the definition says the set of values, conventions, or social practices associated with a particular field, activity, or a societal characteristic. And then finally, the last part of it, the integrated pattern of human knowledge, belief, and behavior that depends upon the capacity for learning and transmitting knowledge to succeeding generations. I think the last part of this is kind of what's key, is like the integrated pattern of human knowledge. So what is the integrated pattern that is happening? That really defines what's going on. So it's kind of like practice what you preach, or you know, do when a parent says, do as I say, not as I do. So you know, like, but the children are going to learn that way. Employees are going to learn that way. And they're going to see what is done. So like belief is in the action. So taking that a next step, I took the liberty of taking the Merriam-Webster definition and mixing it up and adding food safety into it. And so this is my own made up definition of food safety culture based on what the definition of culture is. And I incorporated it in. So I'm going to read it straight from the slide. So I wrote beliefs, social forms, and material traits of the workplace that share attitudes, values, goals, and practices that support food safety. These set of food safety-driven values are in place in every practice of the company and are integrated pattern for all employees. So again, just thinking of that integrated pattern for all employees. The values are in place in every practice of the company. So when we go back to the poll question and recognize that the 3% say that the food safety and quality assurance manager influences the food safety culture most, only 3% of you said that. And that makes sense because they shouldn't be the only ones that are promoting it. It should be in every practice of the company and an integrated pattern for all employees, not just one person. Okay, so I'm going to jump into now the five pillars for a food safety culture that come off the GFSI website. So Again, I mentioned that this is from one of their papers, and they wrote, the benchmarking process wrote a paper around this. The web link is here down below for that paper if you wanted to download it yourself and read it. It's very lengthy, but in figure one on page 11 of it, it talks about the five pillars for food safety culture, and they include the following five pillars. So vision and mission, people, consistency, adaptability, and hazard and risk awareness. So similar to the dictionary theme, there, you know, you can see that there's a theme of what's around the culture, what's around the patterns. So I'm going to highlight a little bit more of what the GFSI committee has stated this in food safety terms and dive a little bit more into that now. So let's go into vision and mission really quickly. So in their in that document, they talk about business structure, values and purpose, setting direction and expectation, and the leadership and messaging. So the GFSI food safety culture paper has written into it, which I think is really useful, are some guiding questions to help you assess where you are with these. So I'm going to use a little bit of those questions. I have a few of my own that I've kind of peppered into this as well, just so that you can kind of think about the, you know, like questions that you can ask yourself whenever you're trying to assess, do I have this written in? So from the business structure, values, and purpose, you know, what is it? What is that purpose? What are the values and purposes? Do they include safe food being delivered to your customers? Or is it all about revenue and nothing else? That really needs to be defined clearly. And what an auditor is looking for through, you know, through their eyes, a lot of times they're looking for food safety in that vision or mission statement to help them see that it is part of a core belief. So for setting direction and expectations, some questions that you might ask yourself, do you have goals for your team that include food safety as part of them? Do you attempt to limit customer complaints or address them? Do you track corrective actions and their follow through? Do you measure near misses? And then in leadership and messaging, some of the questions you might see are, do you have clear signage in place reflecting food safety as part of the mission? Is the mission statement posted anywhere in the facility? Is food safety clearly written within it or one of the main mission points in there? Is there evidence in the employee handbook for the importance of food safety? So going into people, the different categories that they talk about are stakeholders, governance, communication, learning, organization, and incentives, rewards, and recognition. So some of the questions come up in that paper. Have you identified stakeholders that are responsible for food safety and accountability? That might be the food safety quality person, but are there others mentioned? Is there accountability for other leaders in the company to focus on it? Are there others that are informed of the policies? So kind of applying the RACI thought pattern, who's responsible, accountable, consulted, and informed, and making sure that the right people that are responsible and accountable understand their role. For governance, what, you know, is there a food safety governed in the organization? How is it governed in the organization? Are you using any type of standard? Could be GFSI, might be another standard. Is there one person overseeing the operation for food safety? Again, kind of looking at the accountability piece from the governance, but making sure that there's a clear management of the food safety programs and that it is getting executed amongst the entire organization. For communication, how is food safety communicated? Is it clear what practices are in place through various policies, procedures, documentation? Going into learning, is it taught in training? Does training have multiple languages if the plant is multilingual? Is there regular training on the topic? Does the entire organization go through it, or is it just specific departments? Are they rotated? Really looking at your training and development program. What other types of investments are made to ensure that the team has adequate food safety knowledge? So are people going through outside training? Are they expanding on their training? One of my team members recently was certified to manage Listeria monocytogenes, and that was a really big deal for, you know, going through that type of training. So that's extra training that that person went through. Getting the GFSI certifications, whichever one, going through other multiple types of trainings. That's a good thing to put into practice. And then for incentives, rewards, and recognition, are there incentives or you might say disincentives in place to help promote good food safety practices? Overall, is there a reward system? Is anyone recognized for their efforts in food safety? So going into the next part of it, consistency. So questions that fall into consistency are related to accountability, performance measure, measurements, and documentation. So a little bit similar to the people part, but just taking it a little bit one step further. So for consistency, they focus on, are you confident that all employees know their responsibility and are held accountable for their food safety related tasks? And are their accountabilities well connected through their roles, through their organizational structure? How does what you measure influence your food safety culture? So things that, you know, when you're setting your metrics in your company, you know, you can look into food safety culture as part of that. Sometimes it'll be like not having any, you know, like it can be after the fact. So like what I would call lag metrics, where you know, like the customer complaints, you're limiting your customer complaints, you're trying to have a zero recall amount. Or you could have something on the front end of it where you have no kickoffs on the, you know, on the metal detector because you're doing your preventive maintenance regularly, your preventative maintenance. So your PM schedule is up to date, your master sanitation schedule is up to date. So that could be ways to check it too. Are your measurements related to volume efficiency at the expense of food safety measurements? So looking into those programs to make sure that you're not over incentivizing getting the output out there versus, you know, and sacrificing your food safety for it. So I've been in facilities, I've worked in facilities where it can be, sometimes it's a very overwhelming feeling for the QA and food safety team to be able to feel like they are accidentally having to make the decision to let product out the door because there's so much pressure on getting it out the door. And a lot of times it's very short shelf-life products that put that kind of pressure on, but it's still very important to follow all programs, protocol. And then lastly, they talk about in that consistency category, are your employees engaged in the design and improvement of food safety related protocols and instructions? And is your documentation designed to support really good food safety decisions and behaviors? So just reinforcing some of that. For adaptability, we talk about food safety expectations and current state, the current state, agility, change in crisis management and problem solving. So things that come up in the questions related to this section are, can you articulate your company's food safety expectations and how they are applied to every decision? So when you drill down and think about an auditor coming in or your QA, you know, if your food safety quality manager comes through the facility or a leader comes through the facility of any type, going to a frontline employee and asking them, you know, to explain the food safety expectations and how they're applied at that level, making sure that it really translates down to the line and how the line is managed. And then does your strategy enable you to respond quickly and effectively with appropriate oversight to ensure the right decisions are made? So can an employee be, are they empowered to shut the line down? Is that something that is allowed to happen? Do you have built-in time for that in your management of your facility? Understanding where those stops are, or do they pause and put the line on hold for a second while they go check with the QA team or call the QA team over? You know, are there different measures in place to be able to help with that? For the final pillar, the fifth pillar again is hazard and risk awareness. And this one talks about the foundational hazard information and education, employee engagement, and then verify hazard and risk awareness. So questions that come up here in the paper are, how do you educate staff to understand why the hazard and risk management controls in their area are so important? And what would be the consequences of not following them? And understanding the consequences, when you really talk about consequences, helping people understand that it's not always a disciplinary thing, that it's, you know, lives at stake. So the risk could be really high, the probability could be really high if that person does not manage the hazard at their location of the production, that could put consumers at risk to having illnesses. And so really helping connect those dots for them while they're in that type of role, so that they can understand, okay, I'm not just affecting my potential of my job. And you have to look at it from their perspective of, like, what's in it for me? What am I trying to do in this role? Am I feeding my family? What are the pressures that that person is facing? Because behaviorally, they may not always be thinking about that long-term vision of the person who's receiving it because they're not connected to them directly. So help them understand that. How do you review your near misses and use this information to drive improvements in your food safety systems? This is one too, as well, like kind of looking at the discipline kind of culture that you can accidentally create and promote in your facilities. So, you know, like say somebody is, almost makes a mistake where metal gets into the product, but it didn't. And so rather than that person admitting what's going on, they might be nervous that they'd get in trouble for that almost happening. So how do you help nurture it so that they feel safe to tell you, like, hey, this almost happened, I want you to know about it so that we can prevent it next time? Is really helpful in a culture. Like that's a nurturing safe space for people to have conversations where they don't feel like their job is at risk. So do you have that in place? And then can you identify examples of where using industry intelligence has helped identify potential hazards or risks to your business? So the most popular thing everybody's talking about right now is artificial intelligence and how you can utilize that to help, minimize risks and start looking for more things. But there are also some very tried and true equipment and software programs that are already out there. And something that I know, you know, like 30 years ago was a big deal. So I'm dating myself a little bit, but well before my career started, you know, high temperature, short time pasteurization units already had ways to do this type of intelligence where you would divert milk if it's not hitting the certain temperature and time and pressure in the short time. So it would divert it back to the raw side of the milk to be repasteurized. And that's been in existence for a very long time. It's verified and validated regularly in all dairies across the country. So it's not just about what the newest technology is from software and artificial intelligence, but like really looking at what is available in your space, or maybe borrowing an idea from another space, another part of the food industry is helpful as well. Okay, I think we're at a poll question, so I'm going to let the team take it over. Where do you struggle most with your food safety culture right now, with those five categories that I mentioned? Where do you have an issue? Is it in a vision and a mission? Is it people, consistency, adaptability, hazard and risk awareness? Where do you stand? All right, looks like we got enough entries here. So kind of split mix here on where we're at. So hazard and risk awareness, no, adaptability being the lowest, and then you've got a vision and a mission and hazard and risk awareness kind of at the same spot, consistency bubbling and people, the top two categories. So that does make sense. I think I see a lot of different people with the inconsistencies a lot of times in leaders, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then consistency as well, which people kind of inherently create the inconsistency. Okay, well, let's move on to our next section, which is mistakes that our team have commonly found in these. And this is not a like the top 10 mistakes kind of attitude. It's just more of like when I read through all of the different categories, the five pillars, where I see personally through my whole career where I've seen mistakes made. And I'm sure that we could come up with dozens of examples in each one of them that are, you know, more than what I've come up with. So don't think of this as an end-all say-all, but more of just a conversation that helps you kind of look for some of these mistakes along the way and see if that culture's in your company and how to mitigate it a little bit. So going into vision and mission, ooh, that's a mouthful. I have noticed like no mention of food safety in the mission or vision can be a mistake. Or all messaging comes from the food safety quality leader and team. Again, going back to the first poll question, you mentioned 3% believe that that was the main role of that person. And I'm not to highlight the people who selected that, but just wanting to make sure that you're aware that that person, that team, is not the most influential part of it. It should not be there. It should come from a lot more than just them. Organizational structure is very unsupportive to a food safety quality team. So again, I kind of go back to the example I mentioned before. Short shelf life product needs to get to the retailer fast. No time for putting things on hold. Not enough support or system structures in place to be able to prevent a product that has not been thoroughly evaluated to stop it from going out the door before it goes out the door. And then that puts a lot of pressure on the food safety quality team to have to make decisions rapidly. And if they don't have the tools to help them make rapid decisions, or they don't feel like they have the structure, you know, the system, you know, an organizational structure to help support them to make that decision, then it's putting a lot of weight on them. The government has helped us with this in the United States, where the preventive controls rule has really given us a little bit more of just liability on that person to make the right decision. But that also adds a layer of pressure to them because now they know, like, this is my career at risk, this is my livelihood at risk. And if the plant and the management do not support that person, or that team in helping them be able to achieve the goals that the facility ultimately wants to sell more product, then it puts them at risk in their career. So that's a mistake I see a lot. On the people side, so very similarly on the people, I'm sure we all have stories of when we've seen incompetent leaders that are promoted and brought up. But what I want to focus on is that second bullet, because I think this is what it is. Like, what tools, what training needs to be put in place to be able to support their success? And sometimes leadership incompetence is not the fault of the person that was promoted, but it's more of a just kind of like an ignorance that the whole company has around what that person's role is and their development at that point. So I go back to the beginning of my career and I promoted to supervisor pretty quickly, but the leadership skills that I was getting then versus what I'm learning even now, owning my own business, are they're night and day different. And I think that that's something that we just don't think about as much as that developing of a leader and helping them have the tools. Like, they don't just need programs written for them. You don't need to just hire a consultant to help them write the programs, then just expect them to take off. But it's actually helping them learn how to delegate, how to, you know, transfer some of those tasks to other people, how to get more efficient, look for tools that can help them be more efficient at their role. And so helping put a little bit around that structure too, just supporting them as a leader. Then, you know, not having incentives, rewards, or recognition for, you know, even little things, or disincentivizing bad behavior. So sometimes it's just not even written into the incentive program at all to have good quality, safe food. So coming in the larger organizations, they a lot of times will put metrics around customer complaints and recalls, and they will also write it into their employee evaluations how the every individual is managing and paying attention to food safety. So that's something to look for, because it can be a mistake that you're overlooking. And then leadership is not involved at all in developing the food safety program. So again, going back to that, the food safety and quality team are not the only leaders and team members that need to be involved in developing the program. It should be a cross-functional team, and it should have the support of every executive and every senior management leader in the company. If you are producing safe food, it's putting your, you know, your brand is not being affected. It is not good for your brand if you are not making safe food. So it is beneficial and efficient to be able to support safe food initiatives. So it's just inherent. It should be part of your culture. For consistency, things that I've seen in the past is no accountability of management. So I don't remember the percentages that we had out there. But I know consistency and people were our top two categories on that last poll that we did, and it was over 50%. So from people and consistency. So consistency, when executive leaders do not follow rules, and I'm talking if there are any general plant managers, if there are any, you know, operational managers, any executive teams that are listening to this, directors, whatever title you have, if you are in the top tier of your company, listen to me. Quit wearing your watches, quit wearing your bracelets, quit wearing your necklaces and your earrings, quit allowing visitors to walk through your facility without following the rules. It sends a very clear message to your team that other people don't matter, that it only matters that this small group of people are following the rules. And it sends a very bad message. Just knock it off, really. So I've seen it over and over. I went on a tour recently, and I was literally walking with a group of people. We were the visitors into a facility, and the manager, the owner of the company, and I talking to owners as well, like, listen up. Seriously, follow your own rules. Somebody had a cup of coffee in their hand from breakfast when we were touring around the city. And we went into the facility, into the loading area. And the person asked, hey, do you want me to put my coffee back in the bus? And the owner of the company said, no, it's fine. And my alarms went off. Like, I was the only food safety person in the group. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, you just told your whole company, and this is an SQF certified facility. And he basically undermined it all of his team at that moment. So make sure that you are following your rules and that you are one of the enforcers. You should be food safety's biggest fan, as the owner of the company. So, and that will help also with some of the other consistency issues, inconsistent documentation, when you have corrective actions that need to be managed. It shouldn't just be by the food safety quality team. It should be by the entire organization as well. All right, I'll get off my soapbox. So going into adaptability, Food safety is not included in decisions related to change. This is another one that I think I see very often, where it's just not, it's not in, the food safety quality team's the last to know about things that are happening. They don't find out about decisions related to construction, decisions related to, you know, like, it, you know, changes on the line. So maybe you're switching out something on the conveyor. They need to be present in those discussions to make sure that they are identifying if a new hazard is introduced to the company, new product lines, new sales decisions. Consult them at minimum. So going back to the RACI approach, where you look at who's responsible and accountable for that change, but can make sure that the food safety quality team is on the consult list at minimum. And if they are not, and they are just on the inform, make sure they're informed early in case there is a concern that might pop up. It's really important to make sure that's part of it. They're not trying to slow down the change. They're trying to make sure the change is done correctly. And then that leads into also risk assessments not being used in decision making. So something we notice that is not done is kind of like, you know, like what potential risk is it to make this decision? So, you know, like, is the probability high? Is the probability low? Is the hazard level high? Is it low? So some of that training that we've received from food safety, you know, even in preventive controls, doing a risk assessment is really a helpful tool to help you make the right decisions moving forward. And then I'd mentioned before difficulty adjusting the business structure and processes quickly. You know, like when you're in that business structure decision, and I used the example before of somebody on a production line having a short shelf life product and getting a lot of pressure from upper management or from, you know, production to get it out the door without doing the appropriate testing. So if you are increasing efficiencies and you're trying to improve delivery, you still have to factor in some of the, you know, the way that food safety is affected. So make sure that you can adjust the business structure and processes quickly. But in order to do that, sometimes you do need to slow down a little bit. For hazard and risk assessment, things that I've seen on my side have been the staff employees are unable to communicate hazards and risk management clearly. So they just don't fully understand what the hazards and risks are, how they're managing them. So when you interview them, they might not be able to explain that very well. Near misses are not reported. I mean, and I went into that a little bit more earlier, where, you know, cultivating a culture where it's safe to report those. Otherwise, the employees will hold back and not tell you, and then you don't know about a hazard that's potentially there that could be easily mitigated if they felt safe to report it. And then not using tools to help identify risks. And I use specifically like understanding supplier management programs, food safety management systems, just looking through. That we have so many tools in our tool belt in the food safety trainings that we all get, but there's a lot out there, and not using those tools to help us identify and mitigate risks is a mistake that I see as well in many small companies. And then overall, I would just say that a mistake in cultivating this is not thinking about it in the beginning. So if I just look at a like a high level arching, and I didn't have that on there, it just, I realized I left that off, that it's really a big deal to think about food safety early. And as you're developing, I love the companies who come to work with Safe Food and Root that are asking for food safety at very early stages. Like they recognize that they need to have it. They don't know what to do. There are a lot of companies like us that will help companies in the beginning stages. One of my favorites is companies that are in certified kitchens that are trying to switch from a certified kitchen to purchasing their own facility. Bringing us in at that stage where, I mean, it brings us all so much joy whenever we're like, oh my gosh, they're bringing us in whenever they're constructing the plant. That's one of our favorite things because if you don't bring us in early on in that stage, you might accidentally miss something that could put the food at risk. And an example would be, maybe you need gutters at a certain, you know, like distance away from each other to help promote or like slope the floor. Even constructionally, it's really a good idea to have a food safety expert overseeing it to understand, especially one that has experience in your field, because they will know what to look out for and what to help you with in that construction project. All right, so we're at our last poll question, which we will not show your response. So do not feel that you will be seen on the percentage, but just curious if there's anyone out there, you know, hearing some of these things about food safety culture, do you want us to reach out to you? We're happy to reach out and help. Totally fine if you don't want to us to reach out at all. We do have a newsletter and keep you regularly updated on things that are happening with the company. So if you're no, not now, but I'd like to be on your newsletter list, definitely let us know and we'll add you in there. And we appreciate that you're participating today. Okay, so we're at the last. Thank you for your responses on that. Again, the results won't be shown, so we're gonna keep going through the slides. Just to summarize what we've talked about, again, the definition, I'm gonna click through these really quickly because I realized that I had them out of order. In summary, let's revisit this definition that I wrote again and then look at how it incorporates the GFSI's definition as well. And how they kind of intertwine. So beliefs, social forms, and material traits of the workplace that share attitudes, values, goals, and practices that support food safety. These set of food safety-driven values are in place in every practice of the company and are an integrated pattern for all employees. So looking at vision and mission, that defines the beliefs. Gives kind of the structure for the social forms, the material traits of the workplace. It also sets the goals and practices for the company. People demonstrate the attitude and develop a consistency amongst their processes. Setting intentional designs and systems in place, your process workflow, your SOPs, all of that helps develop a consistency and support your people in executing it. Adaptability as well. So the values are demonstrated by people's consistency, but it's also demonstrated by the adaptability to change. And including hazard and risk awareness in the practices helps all employees stay consistent and focused on food safety culture. It really does start with the vision and mission and the top-down support of the people. And as I mentioned and kind of got on a soapbox about leaders, it's GFSI, and I never said the acronym out loud, assuming everybody knew what GFSI was, but Global Food Safety Initiative. Their benchmark processes are a great way to enforce the practices and ensure that various components are covered. However, it really needs to be mentioned that it is critical to have that leadership support no matter what, and that it's driven from both ends of the organizational chart. It cannot just be the food safety quality team or them leading the food safety programs and leading all the conversation. It really truly needs to be a core value of the company, and which I believe is the reason that the GFSI paper mentions vision and mission first. So the vision and mission are set by the leadership. The people are picked by the leadership, and then the people can operate to the vision and mission with consistency, adaptability, and hazard and risk awareness. So with that, I really appreciate your time and your attention. Again, just revisiting that part one was today, 5 ways GFSI helps build culture. Part two of our series will be on August 23rd, 10 ways to develop food safety culture. And then sometime late this fall, we'll announce probably in August how software helps food safety culture as well. So I will welcome any questions at this stage. I know Chris and Kristen and Parker are in the background, and they can help navigate that. So
Okay, I have a few questions here to get started, but as always, everyone can submit questions of their own. The first one being, are there any templates for developing a food safety culture?
That GFSI paper that was on one of the slides, and I've lost control of the slide deck. I apologize. So, but the paper that I referenced on the summary page, that it's there, that link, that has a lot of information there. And then all of the GFSI benchmark audit schemes have, if you've gone through training, there are templates there as well. That help you develop it, and they have a lot of tips and tricks in their guidance documents.
Okay. The next is, if we use a paper survey, should we be keeping these on file?
Oh yes. Yeah. I really want to encourage whoever asked that though to start shifting to digital storage and digital paper if you can, because there is such a push to get a lot of our records in the cloud-based solutions instead. So I would really encourage that.
Okay, and then can you recommend any resources to stay up to date with these issues?
MyGFSI.com is a great one for food safety culture, but I follow several people online. If you're watching on LinkedIn, food safety culture is one of the top topics being discussed right now. So put that in, like, hashtag food safety culture in your search bar, and you can stay up to date that way. Or if you have ChatGPT, and if anyone's taking advantage of that, you can. My ChatGPT doesn't look up recent things, so I would make sure. It might be a paid subscription you have to do that through, but. LinkedIn is definitely the place. Following companies like us, we post a lot about food safety culture in ours. Working with food safety consultants also helps you stay up to date with it, because a lot of them are auditing against the schemes and know what to look for.
Okay, we also just got a question. How do you enforce consistency in the workplace, even with strong top management commitment?
Oh, that's so complex. I mean, you really have to, I think education is one of the biggest ways to, rather than, almost taking it the way the FDA has with a lot of their new regulations, they are enforcing through education. So I would take it from, like, first, ask yourself the questions, are you training? Is your training clear? Do you have clear directives on what you're looking for? Are there, very well-defined SOPs? What type of learning style are people in your facility? Making sure that you cover all of those areas. So some people learn through audible, like audio, and they listen. Some people need visual training. Some people need it written. And really making sure that you incorporate all those styles into your learning programs, your training programs, and then also doing competency tests to make sure. So building quizzes into your training programs to make sure that they comprehend what you are asking of them. And, I really think we have gone too far on the disciplinary side. And there are, some facilities you just have to work that way. If you're a unionized facility, you might have to have some type of discipline. But I would really encourage positive reinforcement first to try to build that culture. And it goes into that, like, give us a safe place to share. It would be a really good test if there's a near miss and nobody tells you. That's a good piece of information to know. If they don't tell you that there's a near miss, it's most likely because they're afraid to lose their jobs, or they're afraid of looking bad to their coworkers and having a, like, kind of the mentality of, like, they're telling on each other. So encouraging strong communication around it too. So education and communication. I don't know if that helps out. Hopefully it does. Other questions?
That was the last question that we have.
All right. Now, culture is a weird one to talk about. So it is still gaining a lot of momentum in the industry. And like when you look at it from the GFSI, the audit schemes, I've been reading audits since really the beginning of my career on suppliers, but I really spent a majority of my time reading them when I was at Kroger. And I could easily, even in third-party audits before GFSI was one of the requirements, like before everybody started going to SQF and BRC and that sort of thing, you could tell a trend of food safety culture with how they were written up. So if the auditor came in decently unbiased, because we do have some biases, and that's one of the reasons GFSI is promoted now a little bit, but you know, when the auditor walked through the facility and they could really nitpick it to death, or they and looking at the types of corrective actions that were requested, you could read the theme in the audit report. So like I can read a supplier audit report and in an instant tell the culture of the company if it's like high food safety culture or low food safety culture. And a lot of it has to do with implementing systems and programs. So like whatever structures you put in place, make sure that they support food safety overall, and you know, and as well as the production. So food safety, quality, anything that puts your brand at risk, you want to include that in your structures of all your systems and processes. And having the leadership understand that will help.
Okay, I do actually have one more question. How do you show consistency when you are dealing with labor turnover?
Oh my goodness, that's a really tough one. So it is hard to, you know, go back to some of the things that were mentioned in consistency. So I'm just going to go back to my slide real quick to reference it. So making sure, again, it's probably training. So are you confident that all employees know their responsibility and are held accountable for their tasks? And are well connected. So I think, you know, like as they come in the door, you'd want consistency in training for them. So making sure that it is an absolute requirement that they go through training before they start, and that will help with it some. And having that documented, you need it always documented. That shows an auditor consistency, but it also helps you know these people should know what they're doing, or I need to reinforce the training with them. And then also look at, is there a way to reduce the turnover in certain areas? So are high risk areas your area of turnover, or is it lower risk areas? And maybe trying to make sure that the high risk areas, you have some kind of focused way, you know, focus on your people a little bit. Why do you have turnover there? Is there a way to reduce it? Can you work with HR to reduce the turnover, to reduce the hazards there? So, and then you could spread that across the rest of the company. But I know it's a really difficult time right now with turnover and with just a new age after the pandemic. And a lot of people are facing some of these strains on their businesses. But seeing if you could at least prioritize high risk areas and trying to reduce the risk and reinforcing training there probably would help some. And document, document, document. All right. Anything else? I know we're almost at the top of the hour.
That is all that we have.
All right. I see Chris coming back in.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jennifer. I know it's a really great topic. Like you said, food safety culture is sometimes very difficult, right? Because we have to look ourselves in the mirror and, you know, sort of look and see where our faults are and how to build on those. So I think it was a great presentation. To remind everybody, this is the first in a three-part series. So please check back with us for the next one. Have a great day.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate the time and the attendance.
Thanks, guys.